TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, today we are gathering for sad reasons to talk about Louise Fletcher, who passed away on September 23rd. Kai Winn from our most loved show, Deep Space Nine, and it's been a while since we've gotten together to have one of these conversations, largely because of time restrictions on our part. We used to get together when actors or creatives passed, but just thought we should chat about Louise Fletcher a little bit and what she meant to the show.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where there are those people that are in shows, and especially those that are even just guest stars. And, you know, Louise was a frequent guest star, obviously, on Deep Space Nine and in so many episodes that you kind of forget that she was not a full-fledged cast member on every single week. You know, she is in the vein of, you know, Andrew Robinson with Garrick, where you just you think of Deep Space Nine and she's one of the people you immediately think of, and part of that is because she is one of the main antagonists and I would say villains throughout the show. And I think one of the things that, you know, we've talked over and over again about Deep Space Nine is the fact that not only were the main cast members obviously so important to the show and characters that we got to know very well, but, you know, it was our other characters, our side characters, that we did the same thing with. And I think she is maybe one of those characters that we could look to and say and use as a prime example of that. Because there's so much about that character that we not only know, but again, we think of her in the same vein as we do many of the main cast members that we had. You know, I mean, when it comes to storylines, I feel like she has as many storylines as Jake Sisko, you know, which is incredible.
Yeah, and he's on the title credits, right? It's interesting that you said she's in so many episodes because it does feel like that, right? And then you mentioned Garrick, who's a character who feels like he's always there, but was only in 33 episodes. Winn was only in 14 episodes, which is hard to believe when you go back and you really consider what stories she was in, because she does feel ever present in the series, all the way from the moment that she's introduced in season one as a Vedic, and then becoming Kai. And it's interesting, too, how, you know, all those storylines about Beryl being on the path to become Kai, that's what the writers were planning to do. They were planning to make him Kai. And then at the last moment, they decided to make her Kai instead. And I imagine the story of Deep Space Nine and how different it could have been if Beryl had become Kai and Winn had either been sidelined, disappeared from the show, had a less influential role on Bajor because she was still a Vedic, or where that would have gone. And, you know, ultimately, I think, and this is my speculation, but I think that the influence of the decision to make her Kai rather than the more obvious route of Burial is because of Louise Fletcher's screen presence and performance and how she created mm-hmm. this character. Yeah. And you often hear fans say, oh, Kai Winn, I hate that character. I hate her. And every time I hear someone say that, I think that's because Louise Fletcher did her job and she created a character that was so despicable and unlikable and deceitful, but in a subdued way that like really makes you hate that character. She's not that mm-hmm. cardboard villain. She's not that obvious villain that you put into a story. There's something about her. Like she even throughout the course of her life, I feel, and I'm talking about Wynn, not Louise Fletcher, deceives herself. You know, she's someone who right. rises to the position of being the religious leader of the planet, who's supposed to be the person who's so in touch with the prophets, and yet the prophets never communicated with her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she despises the emissary of the prophets, I think because of that fact that he has a connection to the beings, the gods that she chose mm-hmm. to devote her life to, and yet they've never spoken to her even as she ascends to the highest level of the religion.
Yeah, I think I always think of her as a career opportunist.
Yeah.
You know, I mean her whole being is that selfishness, that selfish desire to be in power. Mm-hmm. And she will use whatever means necessary to get there as a character. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, people hate about her so much. And I think what the beauty of the writing is that it kind of hits home, though, because so many of us have to come to grips with the fact that we're not all that different from Wynn in many situations where we do have to ask ourselves very important questions as to why we're doing what we're doing. Are the motives pure or are the motives selfish? You know, and I think that's one of the things that we see with her as a character is that her motives are always selfish. And it's not until the very, very end when mm-hmm. I think she finally comes face to face with the evil that she's been flirting with all of her life. She comes face to face with the embodiment of ultimate selfishness in, you know, Dukat, and then is willing to make the ultimate sacrifice to do the right thing in the very, very end. And of course, she pays for it with her life. But I think that's something that's really, really special about this character is because her motivations as a villain are not motivations to which we don't understand. They're just normal, everyday, selfish being motivations. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think what sinks in so deeply with her as a character and what annoys us so much about her as a character and makes us kind of hate her is that she represents too much of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when you're face to face in the mirror with a character like that on a series, it does make you hate them because you're in some ways kind of hating that piece of yourself that can be like that, or you're hating the piece of that character that you're seeing in our world today, you know? And the reason that her character endures is because, well, that is the characteristic of everyone who just is out for themselves throughout all time and space, right?
Right.
Like it's a timeless characteristic that we all look to and just kind of like hate, right? And so, you know, I think that's the beauty of that. And you called it out perfectly, which was that Louise Fletcher's screen presence is what makes that work. She is mm-hmm. just so despicably delicious on screen as this character, and she's just chewing the scenery, and she does it in all of these different types of ways, right? She's over the top 1 minute and then really reserved the next, and it's just It's hard to express just how good her performance is in this show, and that's characteristic of her body of work in general. Like, this is the type of work that she put in, not only here, but, you know, you think of the other things that she was in. Obviously, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where she became so famous as Nurse Ratched. But, I mean, her filmography here is extensive, with incredible roles in films and TV shows. And, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. So, yeah. You know, Deep Space Nine is just a small part of an incredibly prolific career. And yet, I think it indelibly marks her as actually, just one of her most memorable roles. And like you said, out of 14 appearances, which is astounding.
Yeah, it is. And casting her in this role, especially because it's not a lead role, right? Like you just said, 14 episodes, is an example, I think, of how Star Trek attracts extraordinary talent from the big screen as well. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest that's the film that she's most known for, because she won the Oscar for Best Leading Actress in that film. In fact, she's the only actress to appear in Star Trek, any Star Trek, who ever won the Oscar for Best Leading Actress, which is astounding when you consider who all has appeared in Star Trek, particularly in the films. But I think that the fact that they could land her for this, what initially was a very minor role, speaks to the strength of Star Trek, the attraction of Star Trek to actors, and what she brought to it was it brought the writing to life. You talked about the writing, how good the writing is, and I think that, yes, all the things you described about how this writing team captured how we see ourselves, the fears we have about ourselves, the things we want to deny. They did all of that, but no matter how good the writing is, if the person who's delivering those lines, who's portraying that, isn't able to convey it in a way that just naturally connects with the viewer, then it's still not going to work. And I think that, again, that's just the strength of her. There's this, it's a quietness a lot of the time that really has always gotten me when I watch Wynn on the screen, is that it kind of concerns you, like it makes you uncomfortable and uneasy, right? That someone is so, you know, that like these gears are turning inside their head, and yet they're so quiet about it, even in the delivery of those thoughts. And I think that there's a tendency probably for someone to step into that role and think, yes, I'm the villain. I'm this plotting, conniving leader who's going to kick the Federation out, and I'm going to take down the prophet of the emissaries. And to kind of play that role in a bold way, even if they're supposed to be a religious leader. And she just does the opposite. And I just, I can't imagine this role being played effectively by anyone else. And I also can't imagine the overall storyline of the series without the character, and then without Louise Fletcher playing the character.
Yeah, I think, you kind of nailed something there, which is the beauty of her portrayal of this character is she doesn't see herself as a villain. And it's because she's too oblivious to herself. And she's so amoral in this show that it's hard for her to be able to even understand the ideas of like good and evil, really, because what she defines as, you know, good or evil are just what has to do with herself. And, you know, I think it's so, I mean, her performance is one, and just her character is one, I think, that more and more encapsulates the world that we live in, yeah. and has become more and more relevant, which is actually very scary that that's the case.
Yeah.
And yet, I think, you know, I said at the beginning, I think that Louise Fletcher and her character of Kai Winn are just the perfect example of the way in which Deep Space Nine continues to work and why it continues to be such a great show. And, you know, one of the things that I really love about that is that, you know, I can pop in and watch these episodes here and again, and I'm just struck by how much the show still feels real for the day and age with which we live.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the fact that they cast such incredibly amazing people to portray roles which could live on in perpetuity. And Louise Fletcher is absolutely a part of that. And it's so sad to have lost her. But I mean, what she left behind was an incredible body of work that is going to live on forever, right? And, you know, as long as humans exist, her performances are going to exist. And one of, I think, her best performances is always going to be Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I'm just so thankful that the you know, the casting directors and everything, they got her on their show. And then I think, you know, they made the ultimately best decision for the show, which was to put in power a character who is really going to continue to challenge other characters. I mean, to me, that's really, really important. And I think it added so much more to the show than if you had gone the easy way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the beauty of Deep Space Nine as well, is just the fact that you allowed us to be able to create conflict between characters because they're not all Starfleet characters, right? And therefore, you know, they don't have to fit within that perfection Gene Roddenberry box. And so you can create that tension. And you gave us continued tension by having her be the Kai instead of Brile. And so, you know, it's one of those things which every time we talk about Deep Space Nine, I feel like we always kind of come back to this idea that the writers and the creators of the show, as they kept moving forward, you know, they had just laid all of these breadcrumbs and they could go back and pick up that trail if they wanted. And she became one of those breadcrumb trails that I think absolutely 100% paid off. So
yeah, well said. So my tiny connection to Louise Fletcher is that we were both born in Birmingham, Alabama.
No, nice. Okay.
It's just like my tiny connection to Sonequa Martin Green that we both went to the University of Alabama. It's always interesting when I find that
nice
actors in Star Trek are from or spent time in Alabama like that. The other thing I find interesting about Louise Fletcher is that she was born to deaf parents. Both her parents are deaf. And
oh, interesting.
And her aunt taught her to speak, helped her learn to speak. And anyway, that led to, you know, this career of acting. And it's just an interesting background point to me that, I think it shows that, you know, whatever situation you are born into, you never know where paths may lead you.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure that, in all honesty, I don't think she would have thought, oh man, you know, with that kind of upbringing, mm-hmm. would you necessarily have thought it would go on to be one of the great actors of our time?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, she does. And I think it's just, it's such a neat thing to be able to have her as a part of the Star Trek family. And it's definitely a loss for sure. But I think, as I said, you know, I think the beauty is that her work will continue. And I love that I will continue to get to enjoy her in this role for many, many years to come. You know, let's just hope they finally put her in HD one day.
I was thinking that earlier.
That would be great. Yeah. I would love to be able to really continue to enjoy these episodes the way they were meant to be enjoyed. And so, you know, I'm sad that she is gone, but I'm thankful for what she left behind. And I think what she left behind is just amazing. So,
yeah, I would love to see her hats in HD for sure.
Oh, yes.
See the texture.
Well, just those costumes in general for the Vedix and then for the Kai, they were always really wonderfully produced, well done. And, you know, they always had a lot of detail in them. And so, especially for television. So, no, 100%, they definitely need to be seen like that.
Well, a lot of detail and not a lot of unnecessary detail, which, you know, these days we get highly textured uniforms, but they don't necessarily need to be. They're just putting
just tell that to the alternate universe Pike in the episode where he comes back in quote-unquote movie era maroon.
Well, we talked about that on Saddle Up, so if anyone wants to hear our thoughts on costume design in that situation, go catch Saddle Up. But if you want to watch Louise Fletcher as Wynn, here are the episodes that she was in. Of course, In the Hands of the Prophets, near the end of season one, actually the end of season one, right after Duet, is where we meet her for the first time. A brilliant episode, which together with Duet, really set the series on its course for greatness, in my opinion. And then she's back at the start of season two in The Circle and the Siege, then in The Collaborator, season three, Life Support, Shakar, and season five. So she's not in season four, but in season five, she's in Rapture and in The Cards. She makes one appearance in season six in The Reckoning. And then she's a big part of that final run there with Till Death Do Us Part, Strange Bedfellows, The Changing Face of Evil, When It Rains, and of course, What You Leave Behind in the finale. So there are your 14 episodes if you want to do a little mini Win marathon and remember the wonderful work of Louise Fletcher, who died at the age of 88.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a good run too, because those are some fantastic episodes that she's a part of as well.
It is an interesting thing to do with this series, though, especially if you've watched it many times, you know the whole stories. Pick out a character like this and just watch the episodes that they appear in as like a mini show. Is just a straight through Ryan, because you don't normally do that. And it's an interesting way to see the DS9 story from a different perspective.
Yeah, that's honestly a fantastic idea. You could definitely do that. And I think really pick up, of course, you know, their entire arc, which would be so neat to be able to do that. So yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. I like to do that with The Next Generation. I just watched Darmok in The Game over and over. It's my little Leffler arc there. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, Matthew, it was great to get together and just talk about Louise Fletcher and her work on the show here as she has passed away. Everyone listening, we would love to hear your thoughts on Louise Fletcher and Vedic/Kai Wynn as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That's our closed listeners group. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. It should come up. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in, and then you'll see a post for this episode there on the timeline. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. And of course, you can find us in social media everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere. Our username is TrekFM. Matthew, if people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Of course, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. And then, of course, here on the network, I'm doing a lot with the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all of those fandoms we love outside of Star Trek. And then, of course, doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Of course, Chris, you and I are doing Warp 5 as we're walking through all the Enterprise episodes for its 20th, now 21st anniversary. We've hit that now. And we are also doing Saddle Up about Star Trek Strange New Worlds and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. And then you can find me on the Nerd Party Network. There are two shows. One is called Owl Post. I did that with Dre Kaufman, and we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then last but not least, doing Aggressive Negotiations, which is a Star Wars podcast with the great John Mills.
Excellent. And if you'd like to catch up with me, you can find me on all those shows that Matthew just mentioned that he and I do together. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room together here from time to time on the network, and you can find me in many episodes of many shows in the back catalog. And you can find me in social media. My username is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to chat with you there. Well, Matthew, we will be back again sometime soon with a more cheerful episode of The Orb to discuss, I'm sure.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into The Orb.